Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to remind viewers that entertainment is not mindless.
Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 93. On this episode of the podcast, we are talking about Deadpool, a movie that I thought we weren't going to talk about, but it seems like we can't not talk about it. Helping me not talk about it is Mark Wingerter from Real World Theology and Jonathan Sprang from Pop Culture Campfire and Bible Bites. So this movie has lots of controversy, especially in the Christian community, but we plow on through to realize that it also has a lot more depth than people may be giving the film credit for. So listen in for that, and also make sure you're going to realworldtheology.com to check out all our other posts and things that we're doing there. Lots of good content, lots of great things for you to interact with, conversations getting started every day. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Feedburner, Stitcher, however you feel the best way for you to contact us is. So follow the show, subscribe, rate and review, leave us some love. We really appreciate it. And in the meantime, we have a really great show for you. Here it is, episode 93, Deadpool and Delicate Discernment.
We need a movie where Robert Downey Jr. gets to break the fourth wall. That's what we need.
I feel like he almost does.
He sort of does.
With Iron Man. Like, yeah. It's so right there.
But he doesn't. And that's the thing. We need one where he actually just, you know, breaks it twice and has like 16 walls.
Yeah.
You know?
But then it would, well, if he did it now, he'd be like, oh, you mean like Deadpool did?
Yeah.
So then you'd have to deal with that. But then imitation is the highest form of flattery, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but why would you want to be like a rated R movie? A rated R superhero movie? What does that got going for it? Nothing, probably.
Nothing, barely.
Yeah, you probably have to even almost make this movie for free because it's not going to make any money. No one's going to go see it, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
I bet, you know, people will probably take their kids and freak out and then no one will ever see it. There'll be so much backlash, probably even from like a Christian community. Because, you know, if Christians aren't backlashing against something, are they even existing?
Right.
You seem like you're picking this up from somewhere.
Am I
wrong about that?
Well, I mean, it's like Christ said, you know, don't be known for what you love, be known for what you hate. You know,
yes.
It was in the book of so.
Yeah.
You know,
that book.
So
it's a good book. What book was that again?
So great.
Yeah.
So great. I digress. Because obviously we have all gathered weeks from the actual launch date, the premiere date, whatever, the introduction of Deadpool as a film entity into our film world, into our lives, permeating our souls,
yes,
to corrupt it,
yes,
and send us to sad places,
taking the world by storm.
To doom us all to hell.
That's right. So Deadpool has come out. It had a very long road to birth.
Mm-hmm. 10 years.
And I know it. You know, it's a Ryan Reynolds passion project. Mm-hmm. Which, in general, if someone were to take that phrase and apply it to almost anything else, I would be like, hard
run
pass.
Run the other way.
Hard pass.
Because he's directed some movies too, hasn't he? I mean,
I hope not.
I think he has.
Is it that one where he's like in the ground?
Yeah.
And that
no,
him?
That wouldn't
where he's
him.
Like, I need myself to pretend I'm in a box.
Yeah,
for most of the movie.
Boy, if we only had the internet. No, he has not directed it.
Oh, so this is me killing time until you can look it up.
Yes.
So
he's been a producer. That's
producer.
All.
Okay, so Deadpool is already ripe for criticism. It's like I said, taking this long road to even exist, and many people would ask, why did we need it? But it's based on a comic that is fairly popular. Fairly to very popular, which unfortunately I don't know if any of us have actually read Sprang.
No,
nope.
I haven't read a comic, no.
No. Don't say it like that.
He has never read a single comic.
Ever.
No, not that. Sorry. Not Deadpool.
But
I have read some Deadpool.
You've read some Deadpool?
In over the 10 years that I've been watching the production come about and mm-hmm. reading about stuff, I would check out Deadpool and be like, yes, I need this in my life.
I need this in my life. Well, I mean, so it found a way to get funded. It found a way to get made. It found a way into a February release slot, which is usually advertising failure.
Yeah.
And yet, I didn't do the math yet, but I, like I mentioned before, we're weeks and weeks removed from the premiere. And it's still one of the top grossing movies week to week.
Yep.
Again, to be fair, February, March, typically not very strong movie months. You know, you're still wrapping up, much like we have been on the show. We've been going through lots of the Oscar nominees, Oscar winners, mm-hmm. Kind of trying to catch up from December and January.
Right.
So,
well, with the caveat that now March has kind of become a thing.
Yeah.
You know, starting, I think, back with 300, mm-hmm. when that came out, it was like, whoa, this did amazing in March. And so it's sort of a thing, but some years it skips some years, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I would say this, too, that it's really interesting to me that at some point there's just so many movies. You know, like there's just an influx of film and you got to put them somewhere.
Yeah.
And they can't all go up against Civil War. They can't all go up against Batman vs. Superman. They can't all go up against Star Wars.
Well, case in point, Batman beating Superman back down from Civil War.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I called the movie.
Batman beating
Superman. You told the side on back down from being up against Civil War.
Exactly. Because they don't even want to compete in those things. Right. So putting
which
it here.
I think mainly that was a nice little. Advertising ploy, marketing ploy by Warner Brothers to do that.
Maybe.
Because then it got everybody talking about not only our two superhero movies, like talking about fighting superheroes fighting each other, but then you also have now these two movies that are about superheroes fighting each other are now fighting each other for the same date. And then I think they were always going to move because they had it set to come out like last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, well, we need to move the date. You know,
well, it's interesting because
had that date set for like months.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah. Well, it is interesting because it's almost like it is the meta fight, right?
Yeah,
it's the fight about the two movies that are fighting. And I think honestly, the loser in all this, and I know this is completely tangential to us talking about Deadpool, but the loser in all this, I feel like, is going to be X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to get Batman versus Superman, and some people would say, like, well, you see Batman versus Superman, you're not going to want to go see Civil War. I'm like, whatever. People are going to want to see Civil War.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, exactly.
I mean, whatever. So many reasons.
Yeah, so many reasons.
Yeah, that last trailer is just
killer. Yeah, amazing trailer, you know, all this stuff. So what they're barely talking about is X-Men. So you're going to have probably three very successful superhero films before you get to X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily buy into superhero fatigue or even like franchise fatigue to a great deal. I feel like typically franchise fatigue can usually be blamed on bad sequels, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, I just think people are going to be like, I'm still going to see Civil War. Or I'm still whatever at the time, but we'll see. All that to say, we've got so many superhero options this year.
Mm-hmm.
So many superhero options.
Yeah, and, I mean, and nobody's like, we haven't even broached Doctor Strange. I mean, mm-hmm. all this stuff. It's just I've watched a little bit of there's an anime version that was on Netflix for a while that was like the origin of Doctor Strange. And so that's my only kind of knowledge about him. But I mean, so like they're like Marvel's like going a little deeper in their pool of characters now.
They don't have a choice.
They're going to be introducing the world. Yeah, they're going to introduce the world to these characters because they got to replace the ones that are needing to kind of take a break or be done with it altogether. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's crazy. And Cumberbatch looks amazing too. So I mean, there's so many. So
when
many
is he not really?
This year.
Yeah. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I know.
Our Cumber love is deep.
All right.
Strong.
All right. Here's an audible. We're talking about Benedict Cumberbatch now. That's all we're talking about.
This is tangent.
Yes.
All right, everyone.
No more Deadpool. No.
All right, let me get rid of my Deadpool notes.
Yeah.
Bring in my.
Just let's.
My,
just
how
talk,
did I have these ready already?
Let's just talk Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Why do I have this entire page of notes as if I was ready to talk about Benedict Cumberbatch at any given time?
Anyway.
Just my dinner party notes. Okay. So, like I said, all these superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
Why did we need to go see a rated R superhero movie? Like, why do we need to see Deadpool? What, like, Sprang, why, what made you want to go see Deadpool?
I think because I'm an adult, And there's
I like there's where this is going.
About, you know, there's just something about like being able to like take the gloves off, and especially with the character. Like, I hadn't read any of the comics, but I knew about Deadpool, mm-hmm. and I knew that he broke the fourth wall, and I knew that he was crass, and I knew that he was violent, and I knew all that stuff. And mm-hmm. so, you know, when you saw the first one portrayed, and they like sew his mouth shut and all that stupid stuff, like X-Men Origins,
yeah.
and you're like, that's, I don't know much about Deadpool, but I know that's wrong. and then just the idea that, and I think too, it was just the story of Ryan Reynolds wanting to make the movie for so long mm-hmm. and fighting to make this movie. And then coupled with an incredible ad campaign that told you from the get go, this movie is not for kids. This mm-hmm. movie is like, it's going to be crass. It's going to be violent. So like, you knew what you were getting into. And I'm just like, I just have to see this. Like, how can it really be that? And it'd be fun and be a good movie. And you know,
So I want to give you a chance to differentiate here. Because okay. right now, what it sounds like you're describing is basically a train wreck. Like, you know that there's no reason that you should, like, want to stop and watch this train wreck or a bus crash. But yeah. you're driving by, you're slowing down, you're like, look, I'm covering my kids' eyes. You know, I got my arm over on the right-hand side over the car seat, you know, in the back. Yeah. But I'm slowing down and I'm watching this train wreck. So are you just wanting to see it because, like, it's something you've never seen before, or because it promises to kind of just be so gross you can't look away?
So I don't know how far we want to go into it, but I think for me, there's a misconception about comic books to start with, that comic books are just for kids. Mm-hmm. And since the late 80s, early 90s, they've very rarely actually been exclusively for kids.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great point.
The subject matter, the themes that they're trying to tackle. I mean, even just the X-Men, just the fact that they're tackling like a group of people that would be discriminated against because mm-hmm. of a certain thing that their body is and shows like that. I mean, those are some really deep themes, and it's gotten darker, and there's a lot more out there that's just tackling these, you know, real life things. They're getting more violent, and yeah, you can draw, you know, draw characters doing stuff on a page, and it's not as, you know, as in your face as when you go see a movie. But I think there's a sense where, you know, it just looked like a fun movie. It looked like a crazy movie when you saw the marketing and you just saw Ryan Reynolds just playing this character, mm-hmm. and you just. It just looked like so much fun, and I wanted to see it. I wanted to be a part of it, you know, and the uproar of people like going crazy that he's finally getting the movie made and all that stuff. The test footage that they quote unquote leaked.
Yeah.
Somebody quote unquote leaked, you know, mm-hmm. It just gets you excited. Cause you're like, oh my gosh, I've never seen this before. And this looks amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, and kind of getting back to like the whole kid thing, like, you know, the Marvel movies and even up to this point, the DC movies have been, you know, basically gloves off a little, or like kind of keeping the gloves on a little bit, you know, no blood. There's no, like, even the violence you see, like, you don't really see them going at each other. You don't see blood. You don't see fighting. You don't see gun bullets flying through people. Mm-hmm. And so like to kind of pull it back into the movie, like to be able to see that on film and see it like portrayed in like, even though it's fantastical,
yeah.
to be portrayed in like a real, like, no, this is what happens when you shoot somebody. This is what happens.
Yeah,
whereas in every other movie, it covers it up. You know, like superheroes are fighting an alien horde in Avengers, and the city's still standing. And yeah, they saved like five people, but I'm sure thousands of others died. And then they want to
see them, yeah.
Steel, you know, when they actually show like, no, like buildings crash. Yeah, this is what happens when superheroes fight each other. So I think, you know, they're kind of going towards that, like, you know, a more like realistic, even if it's fantastical, comedic, violent, like movie. I mean, it just was like a, kind of like a buddy comedy meets a Rambo movie. And you're just like, and it's a comic book. And you're just like, how is this happening?
How's this happening? I have to
see. It just sounds so fun and exciting and great. Like the trailers, I mean, everything made it look fun. So I wanted to see it. You know?
Yeah, there's two things that I think you're hitting on, which actually drew me to the movie too. And one of them is, with very few exceptions, and I think understandable exceptions, one of my favorite things is to see almost any subject or character or situation played out in the most honest way that it could be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the most beautiful forms of art personally, and I know a lot of people don't dig on this, is whether it's a good situation or a bad situation. It's kind of like why I have a hard time watching it, but I think there's a beauty in watching the movie Seven. It's one of the hardest movies that I ever have to watch, and I think it's so good, but it's depravity taken to its most honest point. And so, you know, it's one of those films where, like I said, I can't really necessarily recommend it, or The Wolf of Wall Street, which gets a lot of, you know, it ties into Deadpool in a lot of ways with lots of these arguments. The Wolf of Wall Street is a movie that I watched with my wife, and we both were kind of stunned by how honest it was and how it gave us a picture of something that was unflinching. And, you know, unfortunately, lots of that unflinching is things, again, that I can't recommend. And, you know, to a lot of people, it would take a very, like I said, a very discerning or specific person to kind of recommend that to. But, you know, doing something and doing it the best you can, regardless of what it technically is.
I think what you're saying is, and there's, I think you have two questions. What, why were we personally drawn to it, but why do we need it? Which I don't know exactly why we need comic book movies and stuff like that, but, you know, within the context of having comic book movies, why do we need Deadpool? I think Deadpool, and really the comics too, from what little I know of them, but just the fact that it breaks the fourth wall, and he's typically talking, you know, to the writer who's penciling him in and stuff like that, in a very crass way, obviously. you know, I think is that he reminds us that when we see other comic book movies like, you know, Batman versus Superman, or, you know, the Iron Man movies or something like that, we're playing in a little bit more of a candy coated dream world with those. This is like, okay, you want to see a superhero who's maybe gotten across some lines with Deadpool. He's definitely crossing some lines. But like, you know, if Captain America punches a guy, he just kind of gets thrown back into a wall. You know, his chest doesn't cave in and his blood doesn't spatter everywhere like he does in Deadpool.
Which it probably should.
It probably, I mean, realistically, it would. And so I think people are looking, and this part of what draws me to it, with all the humor, I am not ashamed to say I have a very debased sense of humor and I love dirty humor. I'm a Tenacious D fan. I mean, some people probably, you know, be surprised to hear that who are listening to this and read my stuff. I apologize. But I'm being honest here, and I think that's what people are drawn to with this movie, is it's honest. It's authentic, which is really, I think, what I think we're going to eventually get into conversationally here, is that authenticity is important and kind of the essence of what we long for. And so, I mean, plus this movie is just, it's just all out fun. It's really hard to talk.
If you find fun in those type of things, Mark.
Sure, but it's really, it's really hard, to, by the way, to describe this movie and talk about this movie without using expletives. So I'm just going to say, because the movie uses, like, we're going to talk about our favorite lines and stuff like that. You know, whatever. But I think people are drawn to that authenticity for sure.
And I would say that was my second point too, because now you and Sprang have both hit on this. One of the things that drew me back into comics in my late high school years, which has been probably way too many years ago for me to admit, I remember growing up thinking comics are fun, but they're not really like good. And I had two friends in high school that said, "You think comics are about like X-Men or, you know, doing dumb things, or, you know, Spider-Man just stopping bank heists, like comically each week? Let me show you some comics." And, you know, I was reading lots of Alan Moore. So I was reading V for Vendetta. I was reading Watchmen. You know, I was reading Warren Ellis' stuff, Transmet. I started reading Garth Ennis, like Preacher, which they're getting ready to make a TV show of, which may or may not be good. You know, so these are the things that I was like, these can be comics. And and just like you said, Spring, it completely kind of shifted what I thought I could get out of a comic, and I realized that comic as a medium is one of the most powerful things.
Yeah, it's one of the broadest reaching
graphic novels, I'll say.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is a segment of people that'll fight you on saying, "Well, it's not a comic; it's a graphic novel." Yeah. I mean,
but I would say that. So I took that, and then I still saw the rise of superhero films or superhero ideas that still, much like you said, Spring, even if they skirted like it's kind of iffy whether you should really take smaller children to see movies like Iron Man or Captain America, mm-hmm. because even though there's no blood and violence, it's still a lot of
intense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still intense situations. There's scary, you know, more intense parts. There's a lot of violence, period, which you may or may not want to, you know, expose your kids to at a young age, unless you want them going around punching all the kids at school. So, you know, there's that idea, but then there's shows that, like, Laura and I, my wife and I were very gravitated towards, like Misfits. Mm. Misfits, a small British show of mm-hmm. a whole bunch of like delinquents that get superpowers. And basically they're not heroes. They use their powers for, you know, greedy, selfish purposes. And you're 100% on board. You're like, I totally understand why they do that. Mm. That's probably what I would do. I would never admit to somebody that that's what I would do with my powers, but that's probably what I would do if I could control someone's mind,
Yeah.
you know, or if I could do this thing, that's probably what I'd do. And I think that authenticity that you talk about, Mark, I think is paramount.
Yeah.
I think people want authentic stories, and sometimes they're not pretty, and I don't think that we should indulge them in every case, but I think there is something to said about authenticity. I think that's what we get.
Yeah, and this might get a little too broad, a little too tangential, but like I think that's why Marvel villains on the whole don't work, because like if you look at a Marvel villain that really did work, and probably the best Marvel villain was Jessica Jones, the Purple Man. I mean, like, he uses his powers for probably what a lot of people would do, to manipulate people to get whatever he wants and be rich and stuff like that.
And it makes perfect sense to him.
And it makes perfect sense, and it makes the character is well fleshed out in that way. Versus, I mean, you know, in like Thor, you know, the Dark World, you have an elf who's trying to realign the
things for a reason thing
to get dark.
That'll blow up stuff.
And it just doesn't. Yeah, it's so much easier to detach from that. Mm-hmm. And Deadpool does not let you detach.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't let up. And
I think one of the things that's interesting, too, about Deadpool is talking about the authenticity, is they never glorified him as a person.
Yeah.
They never said, like, from the get-go, they're like, this dude is a bad dude. He's not a good dude. Like, he's not nice. He's not kind. He's not thoughtful. He, like, is just his life is in ruins, and he's just doing what he can to get by. And somebody in that position that's pessimistic about everything, that's just pessimistic about life and in general, he gets superpowers. This is pretty much what he's going to do with them.
You never really question, like, that's probably right. Well, I want to get to that, because I think that in and of itself is a really good conversation. But, I mean, we've kind of already laid the groundwork here. And so I want to not pretend that this isn't a question any longer. Mm-hmm. And kind of pose it to you guys directly, because after all the Christian, I guess, backlash, which, again, how was this a thing necessarily? I was thinking of, I was honestly thinking about skipping this one altogether. Like, I had Deadpool on the calendar for a long time. I didn't realize it would cause this much. But I thought about just not doing this episode, because I just don't want to deal with the controversy. We put a couple things out at Real World Theology, like things to consider, you know, things like that, and it was one of our most viewed things that we've ever done. Some of our discussion forums and some of our peers' discussion forums were riddled with people just yelling at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't want to deal with this. But when this film went on and, you know, broke all Valentine's Day records.
I know,
isn't
right?
Isn't that funny? President's Day opening weekend records. And now, like we've already mentioned, weeks and weeks later, people are still flocking to it like crazy. I feel like there has to be something here to talk about.
It's the number 3 R-rated film of all time.
Mm-hmm. Boom.
You know.
So,
number 1 R-rated opening weekend. Like, it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, so there's got to be something more than just people are going to see this depraved thing because it can. But I think we have to address what most of the controversy, at least as Christians, all, you know, 3 of us as Christians, are having to wade in to this conversation. And we have to kind of ask ourselves, and I want to give each of you guys a chance to fire back a volley. We don't have to talk about this for an hour, but I just want to give some perspective so people don't think that we're callous or ignorant, thoughtless in what we choose to view or how we choose to engage entertainment. But we have to ask ourselves, how do we reconcile as a Christian collective or as a Christian individual versus like Philippians 4:8, which I've specifically been, you know, kind of accosted with during this time, which I think is a beautiful verse. It says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And so how do we reconcile that and what we watch? Especially when we watch something like Deadpool, which, even though I don't think, I mean, if there's levels to nudity, this, I think, is on the light side of levels of nudity.
Absolutely.
But again, again, like I said, I don't think there necessarily should be, like, it's hard to argue levels of nudity when someone's completely against something. Yeah. It's like, I'm only a little drunk, and people are like, well, you shouldn't be getting drunk at all.
Yeah.
You know, but then in and of itself, I just, you know, kind of gave it
away. I only killed that guy a little bit.
Yeah, I only killed him a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, I only killed two people. Yeah. I could have killed, like, Pol Pot amount of people, you know, or Stalin amount of people. So, you know, I don't want to, I don't necessarily want to, like, justify things because it's not as bad as it could have been. But then, you know, also very, very violent, lots of language, et cetera, et cetera. So, Spring, I know you've said kind of like why you were interested in seeing the film, but then how do you, oh, I don't want to throw around the word justify,
it's okay.
But kind
okay.
of how do you justify going, you know, at, you're a pastor, people in your church are coming to you and saying whatever, you know, Sprang is one of my religious leaders. You know, he's a spiritual godfather. You know, ultimately wise.
He's a guru.
And he thinks these things are great. So, you know, like, you're an example setter. I mean, we all are as Christians. But how do you justify going to see a film like this?
I mean, it's something that in our in my life, I've always had to I've had to figure this answer out for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So when I was growing up, we weren't allowed to go to movies in our denomination
at all.
And then at all. And then, like, when we were on vacation, like, my grandparents or my aunt and uncle would take me to go see some Sesame Street movie or something like that, you know, that, like, totally non, you know, quote unquote harmless.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as I got older, our denomination kind of let go of, like, telling people what they should do, at least in this particular thing, and just say, you need to use your best judgment when choosing entertainment for yourself. And not just have this hardline stance on that. They still have hardline stances on other things, but you know, with this particular thing, because I mean, what happens is you know, you tell people not to go to movies. Well, then they just rent them and bring them into their home. That's not
what you can't. You can't police morality 100%.
Exactly. And that's what I find so fascinating about all of this is the uproar in this movie. When I walked out, and I've seen way worse movies. That wasn't even a blip on the radar of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen movies that were more violent, movies that had more nudity, movies that had more language, and all that stuff. And yet, for some reason, I think it goes back to the fact that we think comics and comic book movies are for kids, so they made an R-rated comic book. I think it just kind of blew up, and that's probably why, because it was like the perfect storm of, wait, this is for kids, and it's not. So I think that's why it got on the radar. But when I was growing up, when I started going to movies, I had a good conversation with a spiritual mentor and you know, talking about seeing rated R movies. One of the things he said was that whole authenticity thing, recognizing that when you're seeing a story portrayed on screen, you're seeing something that maybe not with Deadpool, but with other movies, you're seeing something portrayed that is something real that is happening somewhere. And so to recognize that this is what you're seeing is something that's that they're just being authentic, they're being realistic about the subject, about the subject matter. And in these, like, I remember seeing Top Gun when I was a kid, and it's, I think, PG-13 or whatever. And I saw it as a kid. My mom's like, now they're pilots, so they're in an intense situation, so they may say things that we don't normally say, you know. And so I think there's just a sense where, like, like, in that situation, obviously, you know. And I think recognizing, like I said before, like, the movie never glorified him as a good person. So they're just being authentic and real and real with this character, what this guy would do. And so it's showing you that, what this guy would do in this thing. And so kind of going at it from that angle is somewhat of how I justify it in a sense that and I've gotten to the point, you know, I had teens that wanted to go see this movie, and I told them, you don't need to see it, you know. And like they kept coming up to me and said, "Oh, I want to go see this movie." I'm like, "You probably shouldn't go see it, man. It's not for kids. It's not for you. You need to wait till you get a little older." I mean, but I'm not gonna you know tell your parents what to do. But I think there's just a sense where I'm an adult. Like I can go between like what's real and what isn't, and I can kind of I know what I can handle as a person. That's not gonna send me down a wrong path or to start dropping F-bombs on Sunday mornings. And, you know, like, I mean, it's just, it's not going to affect me that way. It's clearly like just, it's a story. And I'm going to watch the story unfold from beginning to end. And I'm going to, you know, take it in what it's trying to tell me and what it's trying to show me. Yeah.
You have a level of discernment that allows you to go and discern.
Yeah.
Right from wrong, good from evil.
So, so I want to, just so I can play devil's advocate, because like I said, people are going to listen to this and they're going to say, well, they should have brought up this because this is a much better argument, or that, you know, Sprang didn't even cover that, or what about this? And like I said, I don't want to put you on the, you specifically on the hot seat, because I'm going to ask the same of myself and of Mark. So I agree that we need to be able to distinguish between reality and fiction. I agree that at certain ages there is more self-awareness to understand and discern that at other ages. But obviously there's something in this film that you think is inappropriate. And I think people would say that that's hypocritical to say that, you know, that something is wrong, but it's okay to be wrong as long as you're older. And I think the other part is that... And the big part, like, even though it, again, we've all seen it and we know that it's not as bad near as part as the violence or anything like that, but that nudity, even though the sex isn't real or whatever, typically on screen, there's still someone being naked. And that, would be like, you know, Piper's argument that has become so popular. Like, nudity is real. Violence is not real. Hopefully, no one's actually dying when they're making a movie. But when a woman or a man gets naked on screen, they're actually naked and you're kind of complicit in their sin. So does that ever weigh heavily on your conscience?
I think at this point, no. And I don't think it has to do with my being desensitized. But again, I think it's just at this point in my life, I should have been more prepared. I guess in my life, I don't feel like detaching and separating myself in those ways is making me more or less holy. And so merely watching it or kind of taking it for what it is, enjoying it for what it is, knowing that it's, you know, it's portraying things that I wouldn't do in my normal life. But I just don't feel the need to completely separate from it.
It sounds like you don't have a definitive answer, because really, I mean, it's not something you have to, you can necessarily wrap up in a bow, because we're all individually different and can handle things differently and have our level of discernment. When we try to do, and I don't know if this is an official term or if it was in JR's article, so I'll credit JR for it, but this idea of holy disengagement, is something that which sums up Piper's belief about it all, is really not, you can't blanket that across Christendom. I mean, you can't blanket that across the church.
Because, like, don't do anything unholy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just stop doing all unholy. Because
what is
things.
Holy? I mean, like, what, you know, you start getting into defining, I mean, if you look at Philippians 4:8, you know, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, define those things for me. You know, I mean, I think there are some pretty obvious things of what are, but then there are some gray areas. And you can't really just blanket it and say that this is holy, this is not. Even though there are lines that you can draw, but then there are lines that you can't necessarily draw, and what might,
there are squiggly lines.
I say this a lot, but like I think that the gospel is not about right and wrong. I think the gospel is about good and evil. And I think it's good and evil we understand because God has written his law on our hearts and minds, and we have an understanding of what is good and what is evil. When you start talking right or wrong, that's going to be different for you and me.
Mm. I think this is great because I can't wait to have like see the reaction like to this conversation.
Yeah.
So, but
yeah.
Spring, you piped up.
Yeah. So like we had an interesting conversation with a guy named Rabbi Eliyahu Fink, who has who is a rabbi. He's a very progressive rabbi, I would be putting it lightly. but we had him on our other podcast called Bible Bites, where we were talking about the Jewish mindset, or the Jewish understanding of what is holy and what makes holiness. And he said there's lots of religious sects, and even in the Jewish religion, that say that separation, disengagement, that's how you become holy. And he said that actually more faithful representation of what can be holy and what isn't holy is based on whether you as a believer want to make it holy. That any moment can be a holy moment, that anything can be a holy thing if you're going into it with the preparation and to make it a holy moment, to make it a moment that's not just the surface. So when you watch a movie like Deadpool and you see all this violence and you know it's not real. At the same time, you're like thinking, you know, about his character, thinking about, you know, how these people interact. That that even though it's showing this very crass relationship, it's showing a relationship of two people who are like they're one and the same. They're perfect for each other. Mm-hmm. They operate the same way. Those types of things. And then even in the face, even when he's not a good dude, he knows that there's bad things and bad people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he knows that when bad things happen to him, he's going to step up and do something about it.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I think there's even some of those types of conversations are worth having. But like when I go to a movie, I'm not going and shutting off my, I think that's the fear. That's the problem, is that people want to separate things from being holy and unholy, that when we're at church and we're reading our Bible and we're praying, that those are the holy moments and all the other moments are these unholy moments. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't approach life that way. I don't approach faith that way. I never have. Be thankful for those mentors that said, hey, when you go and watch a movie, imagine that these are real people. How would you, mm-hmm. you know, communicate with someone that's like this? How would you talk to somebody that's like this? Mm-hmm. How would you show love to someone that's like this?
Mm-hmm.
So like not disengaging from my holiness, not disengaging from my faith, to watch these things. I'm watching them and bringing it all into the conversation.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's a better way to approach the world. That's the way Jesus didn't separate himself from the brokenness in the world. He engaged that brokenness and he reached out to that brokenness and all the ones that were said to be unholy. He said, "No, actually, they're in. And you guys need to stop acting like you're more holy than they are."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, again, I keep going back to Jared's article, but he pointed out that holy disengagement is actually more pharisaical. Is that the word?
Pharisaical.
You know, than compared to what Jesus was actually doing. But I mean, you know, if you look at this film just in general, look at the theme. I mean, the theme is what makes a hero,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. Deadpool is constantly saying, "I am not a hero,"
yep. mm-hmm.
even though he exhibits many definitions of what makes up a hero.
Yeah.
So I mean, and he just has a fundamental differing idea of what being a hero looks like, and to him, it's you know, compared to everybody's definition, he's not Captain America. He's not going to go language. He's going to say the language. You know.
Yeah, and I think that's something very profound that you just brought up there. We want to say that there's good people in the world and only they can do good things. What this movie says is no, there's bad people in the world. And sometimes they can actually do good things, even when right. even when they don't want to, even when they've spent their entire life trying not to, even when their whole worldview has been evil and bad and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They can exhibit love. They can exhibit like when they're in the scene where they find out that he has cancer.
Mm.
There is real love exhibited by those characters. Mm-hmm. These are not holy people, and yet they've experienced this love between them that you can't deny.
Well, we love to, as a people in the culture, especially in the church, and just, I mean, just people in general, we love to categorize.
Humanity.
We love to categorize things. I mean, just look at, well, that's a comic. Well, actually, it's a graphic novel. I mean, like, we like to categorize things. And so, especially theologically, we like to say, that's a bad person. This is a good person. Mm-hmm. And it really punches your theology in the face when you realize that even your greatest enemies are humans with a soul.
Yeah.
And that they have the same rights and the same access to God that you do, you know. So to say somebody is totally holy, a bad person, is theologically what we believe impossible. You know, it's not, they can certainly do bad
were they,
things.
Were they the only person not created in the image of God?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, it, you know, and I think, you know, movies as a whole, they always have a theme. They have, even if they're, you know, bad movies, they have a theme. They have something that goes back to the very essence of what makes us human and that we have to deal with every day. And this one, you know, is takes head on, like this whole comic of Deadpool does. It takes on just this kind of idea of superheroism and comic books and comic book movies and stuff like that. And I think it just does it really well. And I think the movie does in a way that comics can. It has the movie, a film is its own medium. You know, it's like when John Piper says, you know, violence is not real, but nudity is. I understand what he's saying, but to say that violence is make believe and you can differentiate it is a fundamental misunderstanding of the medium. Because if you need an example of that, there's Watchmen, the comic or graphic novel, however you want to say it, and Watchmen, the film. There's a part where a guy gets his arm sawed off. And when you look at that in the comic, it's you could see the pencil lines and you could see the watercolor, basically what it looks like. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, that's bad. But, you know, when you see it on screen and you hear the screaming and you hear the saw and you see the dark blood splattering, I mean, it, you know, okay, tell me
that's... This is why people can't see horror films sometimes.
Right. Exactly.
It's too real.
Yeah, tell me that's not real. And the medium, if it's doing its job, wants to make it look as real as possible, unless it's trying not to do that specifically.
Yeah. And so, I think, you know, earlier there was a sense where you brought up the idea of hypocrisy, and maybe there is a little bit, if you look at my arguments in a certain way, but I think that there's a sense, too, that even the most holy of Christians don't actually separate themselves from everything. They don't disengage from everything.
Well, they've drawn lines.
Yeah, and they put all these, like we talked about, they put all these different things on a scale as if they're one is worse than the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think where it's most notable is, like I said before, like there's more raunchy comedies that came out that have come out in the last few years that the church has never
railed against.
Mm-hmm. There's way more violent movies. There's way more sexually charged movies. Like when I saw Sexually Charged, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be crazy. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. Like there's one montage scene, and then there's some language and stuff, and then there was like Ryan's butt. And that mean, but even they did. There was no frontal nudity. There was no female frontal nudity. There was no. I mean, there was the sex scene, but they covered everything up. I mean, it's like. This is really, like, I was expecting, when you say sexually charged, when I see articles that say, this is a sexually charged movie, you should not see it, I'm like, I'm going in expecting it to be awful, and I walked out going, that wasn't as bad as this other movie.
There's a strip club, but
that's true.
Other than that, I mean, like...
Well, again...
Right, I understand, but the point, I think, is that if you're weighing these things, and if you're weighing them properly, the violence in this movie is far more visceral and far more constant, and just there's way more of it than anything else. I mean, like, you know, if you see an X-Men movie, I mean, they're going to be using like powers and forces, and people are going to be blown back into doors and stuff like that. I mean, this one, he, you know, cuts a guy's head off and kicks it like a soccer ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty, if you analyze it in a violence versus nudity aspect, nobody's talking about the violence, and that's far more prevalent.
Yeah, if we can blame like Call of Duty games for school shootings, then I'm not sure how we're not freaking losing our mind over Deadpool for violence.
Right. I mean, there's a good like 5 minutes where he stands holding a guy like a shish kebab with his two swords. I mean, like, you know.
Well, I think here's the thing that shows some of the hypocrisy in the arguments against movies that show different sins that we shouldn't be participating in is that. We don't have a problem with violence. Like even in Piper's argument, he's like, well, violence is different because it's not real. But like we've already said, like, no, it's they're trying to make it look real.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly does look real. And then you take a movie.
So why do we draw a line there? Yeah.
Yeah. But for whatever reason, the church doesn't have a problem with violence as much as it has with nudity. And the way this is most prevalent is we said earlier that the Deadpool movie is the third highest grossing rated R film of all time, and number one, Passion of the Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my wife was at Liberty University during that when the Passion of the Christ came out, and there was a rule at the time that you could not go see an R-rated movie. Like there was a dollar, a dollar theater right up from the campus that students would go to, and they would be monitored, and they could not go see rated R movies. But when Passion of the Christ came out, oh well, they made an exception for Passion of the Christ.
Yeah,
because that's somehow better and more justified to see. Even though it is a portrayal of Christ, it's still a guy getting the absolute crap beat out of him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somehow that's different.
Well, yeah. I said at the beginning, a couple things. One, I don't want to let this take up the entire show because I know we can all be mm-hmm. passionate about it on mm-hmm. both sides. Right. And I recognize that the three of us are more or less in the same mindset. And I want to make sure that there's a voice because I want good conversation to come out of this. Sure. And so I want to be careful when we throw around words like hypocrisy, right. because I wouldn't say that I'm above hypocrisy myself. And I don't think any three of us are because none of us are without sin. So I want to be careful that we're not simply name calling. And I want to do a couple things Absolutely. Real quick to round this out. I like consistency. I wish there was more of it. Honestly, we can't do it. And that's the fault I think that we're all finding in Piper's argument. Mm-hmm. It's not consistent with violence. We'd like to see it consistent with violence. At the same time, the counter argument is just because something's bad or something's worse doesn't make bad okay. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all acknowledging that as well. Mm-hmm. There's a couple straw man arguments out there about like if your daughter was going to be nude in a movie, would you be okay with it? And I don't feel like those are much more credible than asking, you know, like, what would you own a gun if Nazis invaded your house and killed your wife or whatever? So, you know, just like these ideas that really don't affect the situation. People are going to disagree with me there. But I think it's something to think about. What am I willing to let, you know, my family do or what am I willing to do myself? What am I willing to allow others to do? And I think there are some things there, some great conversation starters, some great conversations have already been had, like I said, in many forums. The things that I would like to leave people with are when you start drawing lines, like we've mentioned, some things, you know, Christ is God incarnate. That's a line that has a very, very strict line. Mm-hmm. You know, that's gospel. Mm-hmm. You know, the Trinity. We're all on the Trinity page. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a line. That's not something you can fudge. But when it comes to right and wrong, like Mark said, I think lines in certain cases get very either squiggly or gray. Mm-hmm. And when you tell me that a man can't see a woman nude, no man can ever see any woman nude except for like maybe his wife, because it'll make them sin. I say that's different for everybody. No, it's going to make everybody sin. No, it's different from everybody. Cause mm-hmm. I mean, I know plenty of men who sin just looking at women in bikinis. Mm-hmm. I know plenty of women who sin watching HDTV. Mm-hmm. You know, I know, if you go to, some other countries that breastfeeding is not as stigmatized as it is here. Mm-hmm. And no one really bats an eye over there. So does that mean they're all sinning when they're watching breastfeeding? You know, there are things here sure. that I'm looking for consistency. Mm-hmm. And so I would hope that anyone who has this argument follows their beliefs, much like JR's article says, kind of, you know, are we engaging in holy engagement or holy disengagement? Mm-hmm. Just kind of keep that in mind. And I think we can do that by realizing that we're the body. And the body, I want to give lots of credit to Reed.
Yes, I was waiting to read this for myself.
Yeah, so
Reed Lackey,
who's a friend of the show, he was on a couple episodes back, made this really great point, and I think it kind of put words to lots of what, at least we on this particular side of the argument, or at least this side of the view would say, which is, you know, the church is made up of all kinds of people. We are all the body of Christ. And if he uses specifically, if you're the eye, of course things like that are going to be harder for you.
Yeah. He uses an eyelash as an example to say, if the eyelash gets in your eye, I mean, your whole body's going to be focused on getting it out.
Yeah.
But if the eyelash is on the bottom of your foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And so I would say that it's, I fall on the discernment side, but at the same time, I also look at it as a weaker brother and situation. And I want to say this because I think this gets overplayed a lot, much like many things in scripture. When you use terms like weaker, you assume someone is broken and you're not.
Yeah.
Everyone is weaker somehow. Mm-hmm. And weaker doesn't mean broken or less than. Weaker just means that you are aware of what your struggle is. Yeah. And so this, like I said, much like I wouldn't invite my recovering alcoholic to a party with booze, I would I would, you know, Wolf of Wall Street, just like Spring said to some of his teens at his church, Deadpool is not for you. Mm-hmm. You know, if you struggle with pornography or you struggle with like lust issues, especially, and it's affecting your marriage or anything or your walk with Christ, then there are certain things that you should probably steer clear of. Maybe cultural engagement in this venue is not for you. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is completely okay. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you stupid. And it doesn't make you a sissy that can't handle it.
Right.
It
right.
makes you honest about who you are and how you were created. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I think self-awareness is a key.
Yeah. Yeah. So
sure.
So with that said, like I said, I don't want to make be like, boom, I dropped the mic or anything, because the mic's still being held by lots of people who are probably really mad at me right now.
Yeah, sure.
But I say that in a way to close out, hopefully, that little piece of it that we're obviously going to kind of trickle back into. Mm-hmm. But I shift by saying something that amused me was Christopher Lopez over at Real Spirituality. You know, we love Real Spirituality, Elijah Davidson and all those guys. He talked about how trying to pull theological meaning from Deadpool would miss the entire point. And I kind of was like, I don't think so. I mean, given, you know, it's the thesis of real world theology in general that every story has something. Mark's already talked about this movie has lots of theme. And so I kind of want, like I said, I want to respectfully disagree with him that trying to pull a theological point out of this film would be pointless. So now we move into... Mark, go further into how Deadpool is taking everything we know about a hero and turning on its head.
Yeah. Well, I wave this flag a lot. I think our culture is obsessed right now with the anti-hero. Mm-hmm. You know, we see it with whether, you know, I wrote a piece about Dexter and Breaking Bad. So you've got Walter White, Dexter. Now the big thing is House of Cards. Just finished the season 4, which is fantastic. And spoiler free here, but season 4... really serves to remind you about that you're watching an anti-hero. You're watching what could be construed as a villain, and
you're rooting for him.
And you're rooting for him. And they really take the time to remind you. Say, hey, you're rooting for this guy. And so I think we're really kind of obsessed with the anti-hero, but also we have shifted. You know, if you start looking at kind of the genesis of this superhero film boom, you're seeing that we're not just okay with Superman just being a great guy and he does really good things and he wins and he beats up the bad guys and yay, saves the day.
Speaking of next episode.
Okay. Yes, exactly. But, you know, I think we can't let our heroes just be heroes. They have to suffer. They have to war with themselves. They have to go through tragedy and stuff like that. We want to see that now. I mean, just look at the two biggest blockbuster movies that are coming out in the next couple of months. It's heroes fighting heroes, you know? And so we just, you know, if you look at House of Cards, you look at Civil War, you look at Batman versus Superman. We just have this just cultural need to not just zone out and have a hero be a hero and everything be black and white, because I really, you know, you look at it, our world is not black and white. It's, it's not as technicolor as that. So what Deadpool does is just takes that subject and just like kicks it around the soccer field and punches it in the face and it's wrestles
like
a,
it's
it.
It's like watching really good stand-up.
It really is. I mean, it's like watching, you know, the best moments of The Daily Show or John Oliver or something like that, where they really take this concept that's very, that could be, you know, kind of a very serious, very human theme and just lampoons the crap out of it. I mean, just has a bunch of fun with it. And Deadpool, you know, and I think the reason why it was so popular is because of the marketing, which mm-hmm. really came out and just started making
it was fun. Amazing.
It was awesome. It's some of the best marketing I've ever seen for any mm-hmm. film. And they really just went out there and said, let's just make fun of everything that's culturally relevant right now. Let's just have fun with it. Let's just show people that we don't care or we don't give a, you know.
Or things aren't quite as serious as maybe they think.
Right, exactly. And so Deadpool is just the film and really, you know, of course the comic, but we're talking about the film, just has this very great grasp on very human themes, but does it with humor and just attacks it with humor and attacks it with some amount of seriousness. Like, you know, like Sprang, you were saying, there's a really great moment of like actual love on screen, mm-hmm. which is really, I think, really a good anchor for this film. But we are kind of obsessed with
this. We're so obsessed.
Yes, we're obsessed. I keep using that word. I'm sorry. We are infatuated with...
Would you say we're obsessed, though?
Yeah, I would say we're obsessed.
Okay.
With the hero that's not the hero, or the villain being the hero. Because, I mean, look, we got Suicide Squad coming out, which is mm-hmm. about all of the villains.
All the bad guys, yeah.
So, mm-hmm. yeah.
With Gotham, too, the show Gotham, it's like, it really is about the villains more than it is yeah. about Batman.
Right.
Well, let me ask you this, Spring. Why specifically are we rooting for Deadpool? You know, Mark's kind of laid out like how he is basically the opposite of what we'd expect. But mm-hmm. like, why are you rooting for Deadpool through this movie?
Well, like from a logistical standpoint, the script makes me yeah. root for him. He's the main character. you know, they make you care for him. They humanize him. Mm-hmm. From the get-go, he's not a good guy, but then they give him cancer, and so you're feeling sorry for him. You recognize the love that he has for them, and then when this other worser dude goes after him and his love, then you want to, you know, there's this sense where you want to see some revenge take place, and so you're rooting for him to be able to take down this worser dude, even though you know he's not the best of them either. So
yeah,
I think that's part of it.
Yeah, I really love. I think you the one of the, like the first things you said when they said they humanized him. Mm-hmm. It's something we talk about on a lot of episodes where especially there are compelling bad guys or I would say some war kind of films because mm-hmm. that's one of the things like war films typically allow you to detach yourself from the bad guy. It's an anonymous.
Yeah,
bad guy doing pushing bad button. Things. Yeah. We need to shoot them first. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing with Mark's already pointed out. Marvel villains. Marvel villains have historically, you know,
mustache twirling.
Yeah, they're except for the TV show. Well, not right. the TV show. The Netflix shows.
Yeah,
because the
Agent Carter. Show. Yeah.
So the Netflix shows. We finally got two of the best villains that Marvel has ever came out because they had time to give us some mm-hmm. empathy. Or sympathy, whichever one you had, for these villains between Kingpin and the Purple Man. What's the actual name from Jessica Jones? Didn't he have a name?
Kilgrave.
Yeah, yes. So Man. Kilgrave and Kingpin, like you spend yeah. so much time with them, you realize that on some level, there's a reason they are the way they are. Mm-hmm. And they yeah. are humanized. And even though they're not, like, you know, also, like you said, Spring, they're not, the script isn't telling us that they're the main character, so we're not technically inherently rooting for them. We at least understand, and that's why they're good bad guys, because yeah. they don't think that they're wrong, necessarily.
Right, that makes the worst, the most scary of all villains is when they think that they're doing the right thing, mm-hmm. and they're gonna go to whatever, they're gonna do whatever it takes to accomplish that, because mm-hmm. they believe wholeheartedly that this is the right thing that they need to do. I mean, you look at even, like you mentioned Watchmen before, that the villain is, I mean, we don't want to give any spoilers here, but like there isn't a clear villain.
Yeah.
And the heroes play the villains and the villains play the heroes. And it's mm-hmm. just, it's all mixed up and you think, well, what's the greater good? And I think, you know, kind of going on that same thing, the fascination we have with these villains and is that I think for too long and for so long, we like to separate good and bad and, bad people can only do bad things, and they're just, we can, when we have distance, we can just kind of keep them at arm length and we can say they're completely evil. But then when you flip it and you're able to actually see their story or get to know who they are as a person, you begin to empathize, you begin to see that they, you know, have family just like you have family, and they have these feelings just like you have these feelings, mm-hmm. and it gives you empathy towards them. But we don't like to feel empathy for the bad guy.
Yeah.
So when we have a bad guy that actually does the good thing, it like gives us this sense of like, okay, so maybe even I could do the good thing
when
I do that. Even though I have bad things in me, maybe there's a chance for me to actually be able to make a choice to do something good in the end.
I mean, and the same thing that makes a good villain makes a good hero. I mean, or anti-hero, whatever it is. This empathy, this authenticity, this humanity to everything. And Deadpool is straight out there with that, like you're saying. You know, like the first thing we really see him do is, you know, beat that guy up for money to help that, you know, girl who was stalking, or I forget the exact scenario, but you know, he's not doing a good thing, but he is for a good reason. You
know, he's got a gun in his face. Stop stalking this chick.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, but yeah, it's that empathy. I mean, give me a reason to invest, because it's not necessarily. I mean, great bad guys, of course, are made out of them thinking that they're doing the right thing, but really, what's scary to me is that. Is a bad guy that could actually exist, you know, like he wants to, maybe he's wanting to do a good thing. Maybe he wants to just do a horrible thing, but if he has empathy and I have a reason to understand how he got there, that makes me draw lines to reality to see that somebody else, or even myself, if I had grown up differently, or if I'd been in a different situation or something else, something different happens to me in my life. If I wasn't a Christian, you know, if it could be me, or somebody I know, that could do those things to me. And that's what makes it scary, but that's what makes a good hero, and that's what makes just a good main character.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, and that, so when we switch from villain back to Deadpool, that's one of the things that I really appreciated by Deadpool when I started thinking about the character in general after I'd seen the film, because most of this movie hinges on the fact that Wade, who becomes Deadpool, you know, joking aside, he's completely filled with feelings of inadequacy. The reason he runs away is because he feels inadequate, or he's not good enough, or he won't be able to fulfill whatever it is. You know, in fact, like the entire revenge plotline centers around him assuming that he will not be accepted because he's now disfigured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's, he keeps joking about it. And he even has a great gag at the very end that shows how uncertain. Like, he's prepared for, you know, even if things turn out completely right, he's still prepared to be rejected because of just his physical features.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that in and of itself, like, that inadequacy, like, especially...
I'm laughing because I remember what you're
saying. Yeah, because exactly what I'm talking about, yeah. I just want to save it for favorite moments. the thing is... This is what I was talking about, or this is what I mentioned earlier, you know, what kind of Mark was dancing around, which is, you know, this is me seeing myself in high school using humor to hide the fact that, like, I wasn't cool enough or I didn't look good enough, but I could be the funny guy. I could always play it off. Mm-hmm. I could hide my feelings with comedy and things like that. And it's, you know, not that I've got superpowers, or I'm going to chop someone's head off, or put them on a road sign, or whatever.
Be a mercenary.
Be a mercenary, exactly. But not that I'm going to do that, but using humor to hide my own inadequacies was my identity before Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And now I enjoy using humor in general, but like, it's not oftentimes to hide those inadequacies like I was definitely afraid to admit, like back then. And I see that, and I'm like, gosh... You know, he is one salvation away from being me.
Mm-hmm.
I totally identify with Wade.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that to me was like this mind-blowing realization. I'm like, wow, what a difference one decision can make.
And I think kind of taking that even a step further, when he meets the I'm at a loss for who the girl is.
Vanessa. You mean his girlfriend?
Vanessa. Yeah. Vanessa, when they meet for the first time, like there's this game that they play, and they play throughout the movie where the whole point of the game is to be worse than the other person, like to have a worse existence than the other person, which I think that also resonates with how we feel sometimes about our lives. Like, our lives are awful, and then like somebody says, well, at least you have this. They're like, oh yeah, I feel bad. So like, they just
hashtag first world problems.
Yeah. So they just keep, I mean, and they're just trying to prove to the other that they're worse off. Like their whole being, their whole existence is feeling sorry for themselves.
Yeah.
No, totally. Yeah.
So moving on from there, I guess if we've hit the anti-hero thing, mm-hmm. Which I think is one of the biggest things in the film, and we've talked about the humanization of Deadpool himself, despite the violence, despite the nudity, despite the language, is there anywhere else that you want to go with Deadpool Spring?
I mean, from a pure movie standpoint, I think just the fun that they had with, I was surprised at how much the X-Men played in the movie, like kind of just going towards kind of like what happened in the movie. Like I was, mm-hmm. you know, you see it in the trailer, like, oh yeah, they'll probably make an appearance. But the fact that they were clearly part of the, you know, the whole story from start to finish, that they're trying to recruit him for the X-Men. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then he ends up having to use their help. And then of course the joke that he makes about why they're the only two X-Men in the movie is classic. But then, like, this is, like, some of the best X-Men suits we've seen ever. Some of the best X-Men moments that we've ever seen are in Deadpool.
I don't think there's been a better CGI-rendered X-Men or even superhero character than Colossus. Colossus is phenomenal. Mm.
Did you... I don't know if you heard this, but it took, like, six people to be the Colossus. One guy did the voice, one guy did the face, one guy did the body double. I mean, it's, like... ridiculous. And of course all the people behind the scenes rendering and artists and all that stuff, but it was six people like making all that stuff come together, and it was flawless.
Well, and I think too, you know, with all the X-Men stuff and all the references to comic book movies and Marvel and all that stuff, it's almost like another theme of the movie. It's not a theme for the characters necessarily, but it's a theme, it's a focus, because and I think that's what drew people to this, is because I mean Deadpool is like the comic book roastmaster.
Yeah.
I mean, he's there to roast everybody and everything.
He's Deadpool, the insult comic.
Yeah, I mean, he is. Exactly. I mean, you know, and so I think, you know, why do we watch roasts? You know, why do we take something that we enjoy and we love and roast it just, you know, mercilessly?
Bring it back down to reality.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it grounds it. And it allows us to laugh and step back and say, yeah, this is kind of ridiculous, but we love it anyway.
Yeah, I love the fact that that's what it does. And like I said, this will be probably part of my favorite moments, is just the idea that there's like a meta joke, much like Deadpool himself breaks the fourth wall. The movie itself is breaking like the fourth wall of moviegoer criticism. Because it's like I said, it's making fun of people who take Batman versus Superman too seriously. It's making fun of people who think that it's perfectly reasonable to think that superheroes are going to do good things all the time. So it's taking all that and it's lampooning it, and it's lampooning it hard, but indirectly. So you're going, maybe I shouldn't take Civil War so seriously. I mean, these trailers.
Yeah.
Pretty serious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a movie that even turns that on itself. I mean, like, from the very first credits, the credits are, like, directed by some Hollywood, you know
whatever.
We can't say anything in the movie.
We can't. Like, we cannot say anything. I cannot say a single line from this movie. No. But that's what it does, man. I mean, you know, it's like, how do you criticize a movie that criticizes itself way harder than you're going to criticize it? But yeah, it does, you know, it takes that eye to everything, and especially, you know, taking these movies so seriously and making them the rule of law for, you know, how movies are supposed to be, how comic movies are supposed to be, or whatever, you know? I loved, somebody posted something about, you know, Hollywood's going to learn the wrong lesson from this and just start making R-rated.
Someone.
You know,
so. I don't think that was someone. I think that was, oh my gosh, who did someone? Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, James Gunn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
James Gunn.
Yeah, that's right. It was James Gunn. But yeah, I mean, it's just this kind of roasty critique that Hollywood's just going to be like, oh, people just want, you know,
foul-mouthed heroes.
Foul-mouthed, nudity-laced, hard violence kind of stuff, which is not what we want.
Yeah, we want authentic characters.
We want that to mean something.
Yeah.
Right, right. And you see, this is the 12th rated R comic movie to come out, and none of them did good. All of them were bombs. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, none of them have touched this money. So I think it's, you know, to take that as the thing that even culture wants, or the society wants, is more rated R movies. That's not necessarily the thing. It worked for this person and this character. So we can't make it the rule for all things and all characters.
Which I think goes back to lots of I think that perfectly fits with lots of our arguments and conversations that we've had throughout the show. So I'm going to let that be our transition point. Because we've gone this long already, and I want to make sure we have time to wrap it up before this podcast is actually longer than the film. So with that,
aren't your podcasts generally longer than the films?
Sometimes, actually, no, because movies are longer and longer.
Well, that's
movies
true.
Movies are like two and a half hours. So I went to see Ten Cloverfield Lane, and I was surprised that it was like an hour and a half. I was like, someone made an hour and a half movie. You know, that wasn't like a raunchy comedy or whatever. Yeah. So with that, like, again, we do what we always do, and we wind down this show by talking about our least favorite and our favorite moments. And our least favorite moments are come-on moments, things that just didn't work for us. And I would say Deadpool was a highly entertaining movie, but it wasn't a perfect movie. So, Spring, Mark was like, maybe it was a perfect movie.
It might have been a perfect movie. I don't know.
Pretty close.
So, Spring, was there anything in this film that actually did not sit right with you?
Unfortunately, no.
Everything was exactly.
I mean, I think because, and this is part of my issues as a moviegoer, is that I usually just accept the story that they're telling me, and I don't critique and go crazy.
You're such a terrible critic, Spring.
Yeah,
just by enjoying things.
I just want to enjoy it, and why ruin that hour and a half by complaining about it the whole time? No, but I think everything fit naturally in the movie itself. Nothing sticks out to me as being completely off at all. Mm-hmm. So.
Well,
sorry.
Yeah.
No, that's fine.
I didn't have a single moment like that the film did. The only thing I was disappointed by was I felt like I had seen 85% of the movie in the trailers. I mean, I really felt like I'd seen...
Lots of the best jokes.
A lot of the best jokes. I was surprised that a lot of them weren't, you know, kind of redone for the, like, actual feature.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, this is how they kind of do. Because, I mean, we got so much Deadpool, like... just posting about whatever was, you know, currently popular, Christmas or whatever it may have been.
Australia Day?
Which one?
Australia Day.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Man. We could have a podcast solely on the marketing, just to comment on everything. That was the only thing, but, it was just good to see it all together. I really didn't have a problem with it. I was just like, oh, okay. I mean, so that was exactly like they showed me. Okay. Mm. All right.
So... I'll beat the drum for the other side again. And so I didn't have like a specific come on moment, but at certain points it's kind of like when I watch any, you know, like Seth Rogen or, you know, even Will Ferrell comedies, like, are becoming this way, where almost the entire film works, where it's always pushing. But they have one or two scenes where it's almost like they give up and go for shock comedy. Mm. And Deadpool did the exact same thing. There were some things that were, and this probably wasn't crude to some people. Again, you know, this is different things for different people. Uh-huh. But there were a couple times where I felt like it was, they had a rhythm and they broke it just by trying to be shocking. Lots of that had to do with the old woman that he was living with.
Blind Al.
Yeah, and some of the things that were said. But, you know, with that said, we knew what we were getting.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to imagine that would be the biggest surprise.
Yeah.
That the boundary would be pushed too far. At some point, I should have imagined that my button would get pushed. And so... those things happened, I would say, probably two or three times during the movie where I was like, I could have done without that. Like, because I'm laughing and then I stop. Because, like I said, it just pushed it too far for me personally. I'm sure that was probably the case more than two or three times for some people. And apparently not at all for some heathens, the kind that are on this podcast. You jerks.
People on this podcast, yeah.
I appreciate you keeping the lower levels of hell warm for us.
Sure.
You're welcome. Yeah. So I would say that's my common moment. Like for something that was so much itself, I wish it almost seemed like it wasn't itself to just push the envelope. But again, personal opinion. We end on a positive note.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even though people would probably say there can't be anything good from this film, Sprang, what was your favorite moment or maybe moment or two from this film?
So I think I just laugh whenever I think about the fact that Colossus is fighting this chick. And when they're fighting, like her shirt comes off and they don't show anything, but he's like hiding his eyes from seeing it. It's like, oh, you're indecent. You're indecent. And then she like punches him in the face. I'm just like, that was just a funny moment in the movie. Cause it just hits you out of nowhere. You're like, and they didn't have to show anything either. That moment was just like just the humor of Colossus trying to be the good guy and show you like, this is what happens to the good guy in this movie.
Yeah. How ridiculous it is. Yeah.
You know, like I've said before, I think the relationship between Wade and Vanessa, as crude and as crass as it was, like you saw them hitting on all cylinders from the get-go, like they got each other, they understood each other, and to the end, they loved each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a damsel in distress. I mean, they even showed that in the trailer. Like, you know, I've never played that. I've played a lot of roles in my life, but that's not been one of them, you know, which is a play on her actual character name, Copycat, which they don't actually say in the movie, but in the comic, her name's Copycat. And so she's been all these different people. So I love
Nerd Alert.
Well, that's, We did a podcast on this, so I learned a lot about it too. So
there you go.
So that was a good one. I think just again, just the overall way that Deadpool like it never goes right. The other moment I think is funny is when they spin like this whole like scene where they're gathering all the guns, they're gathering all the weapons, and they're putting them in the bag, and then they get to the fight and they leave them in the car. It's just like, I mean,
the whole thing with the cab driver.
The cab driver just the whole time, like, I'll pay you next time or whatever.
You really shouldn't do that, kidnapper. You really shouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just again,
is he in the trunk?
He's in the trunk.
Oh gosh.
Sorry. Yeah, no, I think it's just I just smiled almost the entire movie, like 100%, probably 95% of the movie. I had a smile on my face just because it was exactly what I was hoping it would be. You know, mm-hmm. It would be the crap. Like I knew it going in, so I wasn't shocked by it. I just knew like how far are they going to take it? And again, like the creators, they had like two or three things that the MPAA said to take out, otherwise it'd be NC-17. So they tried, they pushed it as far as they could. And then they pulled back. So, I mean, it's just
the MPAA. If I had any respect for them, I'd matter.
Yeah.
Right.
That's funny because, like, my favorite moment in the film is when the credits start until the end of the cut scene and the movie is over. That's my favorite part. The whole movie is my favorite part. Seriously, I haven't really gushed enough about this movie. This is my favorite comic book movie. Like, it might not be the best comic book movie, but it's certainly my favorite because it's just...
You're
like,
a bad Batman, Mark.
Yes, I understand that, and that's fine. You can call me a bad man. I get it. But, you know, like I said, I mean, it's my kind of humor, but I just love... My favorite thing about this movie is that the filmmakers were given the license to do it and do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, so many great moments that like you can't even catch the first time around. I mean, it's definitely a rewatcher, you know, if you're a heathen.
So much sarcasm.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, like my favorite line, if I had to pick one, was, you know, we're going to see the professor. Which one, McAvoy or Stewart? I get so confused with these timelines. Then the one where he's like, a fourth wall break. Is that a fourth wall break? That's like 16 walls, you know. And I think one, some people might have missed because it went so fast, was when he went to go talk to that guy who was going to give him the, waiting in the bar to see Wade Wilson to give him the, you know, new lease on life. And, mm-hmm. and Weasel told him, he's like, well, go see that guy. He could probably further the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Because it was so, he did it so deadpan. Yeah. Like, was that a joke?
Yeah.
What's happening, you know?
Well, and you just, yeah, it's so quick you just miss it. But like, you know, just the fact, like, I think a fourth wall break is basically just it feels like a guilty pleasure. Mm-hmm. Like you're getting away with something and you're like, that's so great, you know? This movie is just all my style, I think. Mm.
Well, like I said, I too found, like, especially when we start talking about lots of the things in it, I feel like I could name infinite number of jokes in this. I keep, Laura wasn't actually able to come see this movie with me, but I'm pretty excited for her to get to see this movie so we can share lots of these jokes, because they're like, we've been rewatching some other superhero movies recently, and I keep being like, superhero landing, it's going to be a superhero landing.
Yeah, that was great. That's a good meme coming around.
That's right.
It's like, oh, the superhero landing. Is the superhero landing ever going to be okay now? Like, no,
I'm never going to be able to see the superhero landing again.
Ever.
What's funny is that the first superhero landing I remember seeing that was that cool was Neo, and he wasn't even like a comic book hero.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, man. But I would say from the very opening credits, I was like, what is happening? You know, like, I remember that, like I said, the opening credits got me. I just couldn't, I've never been more excited to see who was involved in a film. You know, usually me not paying attention at all. And I could not wait to see who the next person that they said involved in the film was.
Tell me, it's the cinematographer. Like, yeah. Who's this guy?
So the opening credits are, I think, brilliant. The, I was also going to mention the fourth wall break with, the Stewart or McAvoy line, because I remember hearing that and I was like, they just did that. They just did that. You know, I would say, but probably like the one that makes me giggle over and over and over again is the fact that, spoiler alert,
mm-hmm.
now that we, you know, at the very end, once he's defeated everybody and you're building up to probably one of the only serious moments in the entire film.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she rolls back his mask, and he's stapled a picture of Hugh Jackman to his face. That's funny for so many reasons. Let me count them.
Yeah.
One, it's funny.
Yeah.
Two, it's because, like I said, there's this buildup. You're like, this is going to be the moment.
Yeah.
Like, we've been funny, funny, funny.
Yeah.
But this is the moment where we finally get to see our characters share that thing.
I even think he takes a moment to be like, okay, I'm ready. Let's.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a total 180.
The multiple layers of that, right? Like, it's playing a joke on like Ryan Reynolds. They, you know, being he's the sexiest man in the world, which they showed the Hugh Jackman magazine earlier, and then they have him with that, which is also, so it's this Ryan Reynolds Hugh Jackman thing, but it's this Deadpool Wolverine thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, what's going on? It's so many layers. It's crazy.
And the fact that he had to obviously have thought about this before he even went to he's like, look, whenever I win and then reunite with my girlfriend and she wants to see my face, I'm going to be prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
Like I said, there's so many, it's just the best way to, layer that joke. So the thing that it does is, honestly, it makes me a little hesitant at seeing the sequel. Like, can you do this again?
Yeah, can you top it? Yeah, just repeat it.
Even I would be fine if it was just like there was a level line.
Yeah. Just give me this again.
Yeah.
Just,
you know, so different.
Well, and that's like I think we will it'll be a disservice to us all if we don't get Hugh Jackman at least briefly as Wolverine fighting Deadpool or something.
Just like a cameo. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like maybe he does a cameo like he did in X-Men or the Origins. First Class.
Yeah. It was First Class.
And they would just walk up to him and we know what he says. So,
Okay. Well,
Can I say one more moment that every time I think
we've just recounted the entire movie.
Yeah.
So when the thing that like I keep going back to is when Blind Al is he's talking on the phone or something, or he's talking to Weasel, and Blind Al, who's blind, is putting together IKEA furniture. I'm just like, what is going on?
That's not funny. That's mean.
Well, the thing is, it's a joke on IKEA, because IKEA furniture is not easy to put together for anybody.
Yeah.
So it's not saying anything against her. It's completely against IKEA.
But I love how they're arguing the like Swedish terms about the furniture. They don't even explain it.
Yeah.
They're just like,
you just know. You just know.
You never go with that one. You always go with this one.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, man. Okay.
It's great.
Okay.
Great.
All right.
Oh, I could go on.
I know. All right. So, with that said, Jonathan Sprang.
Yes.
Do you have any final thoughts about the movie that you would like to convey before we end? Anything we didn't hit? Anything you wanted to?
Yeah, I think just if you're a person who hasn't seen the movie and you were wondering whether you should, you probably shouldn't see it at this point. If you held off this long because you were worried about it, I'm sure this podcast let you know that, like, yeah, I'm probably going to be offended multiple times.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
Yeah, sure.
Like I said, it's not a hard recommend, you know? Yeah. For a particular audience, I think it's going to hit all the right notes. And for others, it's just going to reinforce their fears about modern media.
I think if you're on the line, understand that the hype about it is not true.
Right.
It's not. It's bad. It's crass. Very crass. It is very bloody. It is. It has nudity. It's not as great as everybody, but it is not as bad as everybody is really making it.
It's not even a Quentin Tarantino film.
It's not a Quentin Tarantino. I mean, you know, there are far, far, far worse movies that are far just as popular or get more awards or okay with certain subcultures and stuff like that. So,
and again, for the fifth time, I want to remind people that we don't personally believe that just because something's worse than something else, that makes it okay.
Right.
Right.
Because I want to be, like, consistent with the message. Well, and I would say this. Whatever your stance on Deadpool, I would encourage everyone to not use it as a measuring stick to prove someone's Christianity.
Absolutely.
Or their faith.
Please.
Yeah. Or moral conviction.
Please.
Mainly, not ironically, I'm really just asking people not to tell me that I need to repent for seeing this movie. like people may have already done.
Yeah.
So.
And I know that, you know, earlier we were using some words like hypocrite and things like that, and I don't want anybody to think that I think less of anybody that doesn't see this movie for any convictions of their own. And that's the thing is, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, base their Christianity on that and say like, oh, you're just an idiot for not, you know, not.
You don't even like grace.
Yeah. So like, just trust that. I mean, in all things, we need to trust that that people are different places in their walk with Christ. And, you know, it's not weaker or stronger as much as sometimes it's just younger or newer or just this is just where I can, as far as I can go. And the Spirit has convicted me of that. Okay, great. That's fine. That's fine. Just trust God to guide you in that. And if God is telling, if you feel like the Spirit is telling you not to see this movie, don't see the movie. Like, I'm not going to tell you to go see it just because you want to see it. Like, Trust that those inclinations are from somewhere other than just the, you know, just your conscience or just your, I don't know what else I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, yeah. God's not out trying to confuse you.
Right. You know? Right. Just trust that. And I will too. I will trust God in guiding myself.
Well, and so there's a tough piece because obviously, I'm going to have lots of people that personally disagree with me. There's a lot of people that don't really enjoy / agree with real world theology because I have less conviction about certain things than others. And that's why there's lots of really good podcasts. Lots of those podcasters have been on this show that would probably not review a movie like Deadpool or review some of the other things like Game of Thrones that we've had a chance to talk about. And I totally respect all those people. And I think they are great. And that if you can get something out of how they see film, then that's awesome. Obviously, we have a particular way at Real World Theology that we have chosen or have felt convicted to engage with culture about. And we're trying to do the best we can to see what people are getting out of film, whether they know they're getting it out of there or not. And we hope that that's been valuable in some way. And again, I really can't stress enough that None of us are experts. None of us are perfect. And it's why we like the word conversation instead of sermon.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have disagreed with anything that we've said, which I can't imagine how you would agree with everything, because I don't even necessarily 100% agree with my guests, even though I think they're great. I mean, obviously, we have different lines on things, and that's okay. But that's why we're having this conversation. That's why we want to continue to have this conversation. And we don't necessarily want to have fights. We've had a lot of hard discussions, like I said, on discussion boards for ours, for some other podcasts and stuff. So engage thoughtfully with your fellow Christian. Don't use something like this to beat your brother down.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Whichever side you come down on it. So I really appreciate the conversation and the way that it was entered into by Mark, by Jonathan Spring, first time guest. And I hope that whoever you're having these type of conversations about any number of things, because as we've pointed out in some blog posts, there are TV shows that are very popular that Christians watch all the time with more questionable content than Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you're not convicted negatively, then think about why you're watching it. Think about why your friends are watching it, why your family's watching it. Have conversations about it.
Mm-hmm.
Engage it. Don't just turn your brain off.
That's right.
So thank you guys for having these conversations. And because you have, I really want people to be able to continue these conversations with you guys or with us in general. So if you're not going to engage with these guys on our Real World Theology discussion group, Spring, how can people follow what you do or get a hold of you?
Yeah, so I'm a pastor down in Texas. And so I'm on the preaching team. I lead the worship. So you can check us out at catrow.org. But I also do a podcast called Pop Culture Campfire, where we discuss things that are coming out in pop culture in the coming months. And we take about 4 weeks in advance and just discuss the stories that have led us to the point in where you're going to approach them. So we're in the middle of our Batman v Superman series, looking at Batman. And then next week we look at the battles that Batman and Superman have fought, whether it's been in comics or movies or cartoons.
Mm.
So that's kind of how our podcast works. So we'd love to have you over there. So we've had a couple of real world guys in our Star Wars podcast. So that was a lot of fun. So thanks for letting me be on the show today.
No, awesome. It was really great to really finally be able to work this out. So hopefully there will be another opportunity in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I'd love it.
If you beg. Mark, how can people follow what you do and follow you?
Well, I'm most active on the Real World discussion page on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, not on that group, it actually has been a quite a great group to be a part of and discussing films. I'm also on Twitter. You can find me at Mark Wingdinger. And I'm a writer, so I don't have things you can engage me in all the time, but I am online, so come see me. I'd love to discuss this or other films and stuff. I did a series on Agent Carter, and do a lot of weekly reviews for Real World Theology. Come find my stuff and let's talk.
Awesome. As usual, you can find me at Fizzification on Twitter, and I will, of course, be in the Real World Theology discussion group, mostly engaging with anyone who wants to chat about anything, much like all the other people who've contributed to Real World Theology. So if there's anybody that you are looking for, you can probably find them there. You can probably continue the conversations there. We're so grateful that these guys are part of that group, that they've been on this podcast, that they've had this conversation. So please, please, please engage them, follow their work, because this isn't the only good stuff they're doing. I really, really appreciate people of all kinds of views on this movie. Hopefully having sat through this episode, hopefully either expanded their views a little bit or come up with some really great gotchas to throw back in her face. Yeah. Either way, as long as you're listening, as long as you're engaging and being thoughtful about your beliefs and how that engagement of culture works, we're very, very thankful for you for listening and for taking the time to make us a part of your week. We are so, so grateful. So until next episode, please remember that story is powerful, and we believe that entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Chica-chica.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!
How do you not know? Do you not even?
I don't know anything.
Do you not even internet, bro?
No.